Retailers level peaks with automation. The supply chain impacts of the Baltimore Key Bridge collapse. And cargo drones tackle the middle mile. Pull up a chair and join us as the editors of DC Velocity discuss these stories as well as news and supply chain trends on this week's Logistics Matters podcast. Hi, I'm Dave Maloney. I'm the Group Editorial Director at DC Velocity. Welcome. Logistics Matters is sponsored by Aptian. Aptian is a global provider of mission-critical, industry-specific logistics and transportation management solutions. Aptian Proof of Delivery provides advanced transportation systems to world-leading brands, helping to transform final-mile delivery services, boost operational efficiencies, and drive business growth. Your delivery operation can be a powerful vehicle to deliver game-changing customer service. Visit aptian.com and discover what's next now. As usual, our DC Velocity senior editors, Ben Ames and Victoria Kickham, will be along to provide their insights into the top stories of this week. But to begin today, retailers have always had to deal with seasonal peak periods. However, those fluctuating volumes make it difficult on distribution operations. But now, there are technologies that make it easier to smooth out the peaks. To find out more, here is Ben with today's guest. Ben?
Thanks, Dave. If you're in the logistics or fulfillment or delivery business, then congratulations. The hustle and bustle of the holiday season has passed, and retailers can finally catch their breath after meeting the intense demands of the winter peak season. But in a lot of ways, the job seems to get harder every year. We see challenges like next day deliveries and an ever-expanding number of SKUs to track, an explosion in returns, reverse logistics. And by the way, there's a labor shortage out there. So you probably don't have quite enough workers to get all that done. Here to talk with us today about surviving peak season, we have Crystal Parrott, who is Chief Operating Officer at Plus One Robotics. Welcome, Crystal.
Thanks, Ben. I appreciate you having me.
Glad you could join us. To start off, for our listeners who may not remember exactly what Plus One does, could you bring us up to speed on exactly what the company provides and how that fits into peak season operations?
Certainly. Plus One Robotics, you know, provides an AI vision solution that really enables warehouse automation. And we focus our automation in two primary functions within the warehouse and logistics, parcel induction and mixed depalletization. And what the vision system provides is the eyes and brain to a robotic arm that enables the diverse product set to be handled in the logistics space. And you've noticed the infinite variety of the packages that arrive on the doorstep every day. Well, we leverage not only the AI, but a human in the loop structure to help the AI work faster, help the systems become and maintain efficiency throughout the peak seasons because of the diversity that is, you know, at the core of that time period. And it's one of the things that really differentiates Plus One, and actually that's where the name comes from. Now, how we actually fit into the peak season is we provide those systems for parcel induction for a number of primary retailers. And what that means is that all of those parcels that have to be sorted and gone through regional distribution, they would come through a sorting system that our robots would pick and place onto an inline or other type of shuttle system.
Got it, thank you. So let's look back at peak season 2023. It was a tough one with lots of challenges that I mentioned a minute ago. And you had a front row seat, it sounds like, but for the customers that Plus One works with. So how did retailers do? Did they get a passing grade?
You know, they had a lot of challenges that they had to overcome. And I believe they do get a passing grade because they took a lot of time throughout 23 in preparation for that, implementing new AI automation, robotics, cloud-based, and that really helped them improve their operational efficiency in preparing for the, you know, the peak in order processing that they have to do. Now, that's not to say that they didn't experience challenges due to weather, due to other events, but what they took it upon themselves to incorporate, you know, a little bit ahead of time, and we're seeing that, is some of these advanced automation applications and solutions that really help them stabilize their operations through peak. And I think that was really the key, is not only were they able to handle some of the surges, but they were also able to just streamline their operation and reduce some of their dependency around the human labor workforce.
One of the keys to that success we're talking about is, of course, how to get more efficient through that technology and automation. But the term automation can mean about a million things. What have you seen about how the top retailers leverage their automation the best?
Well, they go through a variety of different automated platforms, and you hear a lot about robotics and automation. What we saw implemented at the probably the last half of 2023 in a lot of facilities is some of the cube-based storage automation that brought materials to operators more quickly, eliminating the need for some of the larger shuttle systems, and that allowed them to process faster. We saw implementations of robotic arm technologies for picking and placing, not only in the order fulfillment area, but in the parcel distribution area as well. And then you saw the third segment was the mobility aspect with AMRs, automated fork trucks, and just that type of, I want to say, unstructured movement throughout the warehouse, which allowed them to address labor shortages in a wide variety of positions within the logistic operation.
Really interesting. And variety is the key there, of course, both in terms of the tasks that they're doing, but also I think the challenge changes throughout the year, right? Do they use the automation differently to manage seasonal pressures like that winter peak than year-round demands?
I think what you see is they don't use necessarily the automation differently. They become more dependent on it to stabilize their flow. They are augmenting their operations with people to handle the things that the automation may or may not be able to handle as fast or improve on demand. And what we tended to observe is that during a peak season, and I'm going to use an example with sorter technologies that might have a cross belt or a bombay or an inline shuttle or sorter, and the automation would feed one of 10 lanes or four of 10 lanes. Well, in normal operation, when you're not in peak, those lanes that are serviced by the automation can handle the majority of the flow and have just some human addition, you know, as that volume fluctuates. And once it gets into peak, they use the humans in conjunction with the automation to be able to handle that burst. But what we're seeing is that they're more and more relying on the automation to handle the ability to get the product either to the person faster or supplement automated robot picking with people for the things that it either can't handle or for peak bursts that, you know, they need the extra volume through the system.
Got it. Really interesting. You mentioned workers in conjunction with the automation there. So I'm curious, what does this approach mean for the workers in the DC and the fulfillment centers? If they're working alongside or in conjunction or with those automation tools, do their job profiles change? Do they need new skills?
They do. As a matter of fact, in a lot of areas that are adopting some of these automated technologies, the employees who used to do some of the jobs that the robots are now doing are becoming, you know, the robot supervisors, or they're becoming the ones who define, you know, where the next opportunity is for that automation to be successful. So you're seeing a lot of different technologies that use not only collaborative work between an automated robot and a person, similar to a fetch or to a locus, where they are bringing and using all of those different parts of the business together, they tend to see that that collaboration eliminates walk time, basically. In other areas, you will see that they will use robots as order fulfillment pickers. Well, we all know that robots and the manipulation capability of their grippers is not as good as a human. So what they are doing is the things that a robot can handle very effectively, they let those robots handle that product line and those orders. And for the things that take a little bit more manipulation, they have the humans do instead, because they are quite capable, much more dexterous, and can handle so many different things and include packaging and package sets the way they need to do. And then from an induction perspective, just handling, really they become more quality evaluators, that the things that are being put on the sorters and on the shuttles are in a manner and positioned in such a way that they can successfully be sorted downstream. And so with all of these things, it's really the collaboration of the things that the automation does best and what the human does best. And when you put those things together, you can really exceed operational efficiency and throughput in existing facilities.
Really interesting. That's a great description. We're sure living in a new age here. Crystal, we really appreciate your taking the time to come share your experiences with us today on the show.
Thank you so much.
Our guest today has been Crystal Parrott, who is COO at Plus One Robotics. Back to you, Dave.
Thank you, Crystal and Ben. Now let's take a look at some of the other supply chain news from the week. And Victoria, you wrote a story for the April issue of DC Velocity that looks at how drones are impacting the middle mile transportation sector of freight movement. Can you give us a sneak peek at your story?
Absolutely. Yeah, happy to, Dave. So we hear a lot about drone delivery and logistics, and primarily for last mile delivery of small or lightweight retail merchandise or medicine that's going to customers' homes. Companies like Walmart and Amazon have made strides in this area, for example. But there's also quite a bit of research and development into larger aerial drones for cargo delivery. So I wanted to look into that for our April issue. And what I found, there's a European company that's very close to making commercial delivery operations with these larger drones a reality. The company's called Dronamics, and its drone is capable of carrying much more than just a few pounds of freight, which is what those last mile drones do, and they can deliver a lot farther as well.
So there's bigger drones. Can you share what the details of that are?
Absolutely. So Dronamics has developed a Cessna-sized aircraft it calls the Black Swan. And it's a middle mile drone, as you mentioned in our intro here, that can deliver 770 pounds of cargo up to about 1,500 miles. Its fuselage is maximized for freight. It's got no cockpit, so that gives the drone a maximum storage capacity of 125 cubic feet. Essentially, it holds about the same as a small delivery van. Technicians control it via a remote cockpit. And the system only requires a short runway for takeoff and landing, about 1,300 feet, and that can be paved or unpaved, doesn't matter. The idea is that this service will eliminate the need to use multiple trucks and vans to transport freight, replacing them with a service that can get the cargo closer to the consumer faster. And they say it can be especially helpful in serving remote or hard-to-reach areas. Dronamics, which is a Bulgarian company and has done much of its testing in Eastern Europe, actually formed a partnership with Qatar Airways Cargo last year to provide their service in Greece, which will connect Athens with customers in the country's northern industrial area, as well as the islands in the south. And those deliveries are expected to begin later this year. The company also works with freight forwarders and logistics service providers, and they've tested the service in Europe and Australia, but they hope to expand its business to North America as well. That may be a bit trickier, though, due to stricter government regulations on drone use here in the U.S., but time will tell. And as I said, listeners can learn more about the service in our April issue online and in print.
That sounds really interesting. And as you said, that story is online now for our listeners to read at dcvelocity.com. So we encourage them to go there to check it all out. Thanks, Victoria.
You're welcome.
And Ben, of course, the big supply chain story this week has been the disaster in Baltimore, where that cargo ship, the Dolly, struck and collapsed the Key Bridge. You've been following developments there all week long, and you have the latest for us.
Yeah, that's right, Dave. As you said, this was the Francis Scott Key Bridge that goes right across the mouth of Baltimore Harbor there. And it was struck by that Dolly container ship. They're a part of the Maersk and MSC 2M Alliance. Investigators today and rescue workers are still trying to figure out how that happened. They're tragically continuing to pull the bodies of victims from the water, and it will probably take years to ultimately rebuild the bridge, and which had carried traffic on I-695. In the meantime, supply chains have to adapt to the change, and that's the angle that we've been studying. Baltimore is the nation's 20th biggest port by total tons, and maybe 12th biggest by container TEUs. But its biggest impact in terms of measuring the impact of the port's closure was the specific types of freight that it handled. It was actually, still is once it gets back online, the top US port for autos and light trucks, particularly roll-on, roll-off was its specialty. Therefore also handled actually the top in the nation heavy farm and construction machinery. Also top of the nation for imported sugar and imported gypsum. I had to look that up, but gypsum is an ingredient in construction cement and farm fertilizer. But because the collapsed key bridge there is now completely blocking the port from the ocean, we're obviously going to see interruptions in those things.
Yeah, and of course, everybody's had to scramble. Have you seen how other companies are shifting their supply chains to deal with getting around all of those problems?
Yeah, they're scrambling to get there. One silver lining to the tragedy is that ocean freight is now in a slow season between a Lunar New Year or Chinese New Year and the winter peak season. And so that removes really significant congestion at the other major East Coast ports, which means that Baltimore's volumes should be able to be shifted to other ports without causing too much of a disruption. That was an analysis that came from Judah Levine over at Freightos. Some of those backup ports might turn out to be Norfolk, Savannah, New York, New Jersey, experts say. But it takes time, of course, to change the routes and also to book time at the docks. So we're seeing right now dozens of container ships inbound to the US East Coast that are either steaming very slowly out at sea, or some of them have dropped anchor near some of those three or four ports that we mentioned. In the meantime, though, there's also a series of delays on land because of that destroyed bridge. We're seeing truck traffic get delayed. That means that freight rates will probably rise. A report from Ease Logistics said that the removal of that major I-695 corridor will obviously create congestion on adjacent road routes. That adds travel time to most highways around the region. And that those two effects will also cut the effective capacity in the region, since Ease Logistics said that a driver that could previously have taken two or three local loads in a day might now be able to take just one or two of those local loads. So that'll effectively, you know, remove truck space from that equation and put even more pressure on land rate freight prices to increase. So for the impacts of this accident, we're going to keep an eye on those, but they're definitely going to ripple far out from just the port complex itself.
Certainly. And it's just another blow to our supply chains. And we, of course, have seen a lot of those the past few years. It just continues to show the importance of building resilience within our supply chains.
That's exactly right. We're going to learn some new lessons on that topic this time around as well. But I hope it goes smoothly.
Thank you, Ben.
Glad to.
We encourage listeners to go to dcvelocity.com for more on these and other supply chain stories. Also, check out the podcast notes section for some direct links to read more about the topics that we discussed today. And we'd like to thank Crystal Parrott of Plus One Robotics for being our guest. We welcome your comments on this topic and our other stories. You can email us at podcast@agilebme.com. We also encourage you to subscribe to Logistics Matters at your favorite podcast platform. Our new episodes are uploaded on Fridays. And a reminder that Logistics Matters is sponsored by Aptian. Forged from decades of industry experience, Aptian Proof of Delivery supports global delivery fulfillment operations with the tools they need to increase efficiencies, gain real-time visibility, automate communications, and enhance the delivery experience for customers. Your delivery operation can be a powerful vehicle to deliver game-changing customer service, reduce costs, and drive growth. Aptian Proof of Delivery can help. Visit aptian.com and discover how now. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Logistics Matters. Be sure to join us. Until then, have a great week.